We're not on. We're on. We're
we
good.
Are on.
All right, just double checking. I'm going to put my phone on airplane mode if I haven't already. Yes, I have. Good deal.
All right, so let's get right into it. Yes. So I feel like it's that time of year where spring break's coming up, summer's coming up, and people are kind of all of the sudden realizing it. And especially here in upstate New York, yep. We've got the Boilermaker.
Oh, yes. Boilermaker. I've been getting a lot of emails, and all about you, but I've been getting emails about, I'm going to run the Boilermaker. Can I start running for my cardio?
Is anyone else running the Boilermaker? Are you?
No. I will be there for moral support for any one of my clients that are running, any of my friends. I ran it. The last time I ran it was in 2000. I think it was 2014. I ran an astonishing 72 minutes.
Which is pretty impressive.
And then I couldn't walk for 3 months.
yeah, I can totally attest to that. I ran it once. Was it maybe 2016? And, you know, you feel good during it. You know, the vibe of the crowds and, you know, the popsicles. Those are great. But I literally...
The one guy with the Utica Club at the end just kind of handed beers out.
Yes. you don't even remember. You just take it. You don't care who it's from.
I'm not sure if I drink... This is already open. I
don't it's know if fine. You just ran 9 miles, so why not?
YOLO.
I ran it once, and I'll probably never do it again. It was a fun experience, but I have to agree. Afterwards, my body was just shot. My knees, I could barely stand up.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing, too, is I was actually in the middle of a training cycle where my deadlift was through the roof. And as a matter of fact, I was switching to sumo deadlifts. And this is funny because ever since that, I had some nasty pains in my hip flexors and my knees to the point where I can't even sumo deadlift anymore.
Wow.
I mean, I'm sure I can. I just switched to conventional.
Yeah.
And I don't pull as much as I did back then. But I was really excited because...
You had like a streak going.
Yeah, well, I'm not really built well to do sumo deadlifts, and it was more of a challenge because one of my friends was actually doing sumo deadlifts, and I'm always going to be a conventional deadlift pro, and I was actually just trying to out pull him, and
especially
I was
doing I programmed everything. And
yes, exactly. So I was like I programmed everything, and my deadlift was coming up nicely, and then I ran the damn Boilermaker, and that just went to the wayside. And,
oh no,
that was it. You know, but. It was a good learning experience, that is for sure, because, you know, most of our clients know that I'm against running as far as a primary means of cardio,
mm-hmm.
to an extent.
Yeah, and I think, you know, running the Boilermaker is a perfect example that, you know, prolonged, like, stress with running, like, clearly it's detrimental. It's not like you're going out for, like, a quick 15-minute leisurely jog, you know. You literally put your body through the ringer to run, and then, like, we both experienced it firsthand, crippled.
Yes.
And people die.
Like, the thing is, so if I were to do this all over again, and I, like I said, I love the Boilermaker, everything. I love everything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Born and raised in Utica, so I'm always going to support that, and mm-hmm. I will support running to an extent. My dad was a hardcore runner, and he was 6'5", and... Mm-hmm. Now he needs knee and hip replacements.
Doesn't surprise me.
You know, and the thing is, too, is that if someone is going to choose cardio, choose running as a means or a cardio,
mm-hmm.
cardio, I can't even talk to
him. It's the end of the week.
Oh, my gosh. It's late and it's Thursday. If someone's going to choose running as their primary means of cardio, I really think they need to hone in on their form and the weight and their stride. Because yes. There's a proper way to run. And if you ever, like, drive up and down, like, Genesee Street in the summer and you see people running and you just see them slouched over and they just look in pain.
Yes, dragging their feet.
Those are the people that are going to be sore, mm-hmm. that are probably going to develop some joint issues later on in life.
Sure.
So I really, you know, I encourage people to add the stimulus of training, okay, mm-hmm. or of running. Mm-hmm. I don't even want to say the word. I think that's what it is. so, like, for our clients, I don't even say, okay, a few months off from the Boilermaker. Let's start doing an outdoor run once a week, maybe tackle a few hills eventually,
mm-hmm.
Maybe even get involved in those development runs, which are, for any of you guys that are not from the area, the developmental runs are just like a 5 and a 10K, and they go up through these like hilly areas called the switchbacks,
And it's pretty intense.
And all they're tough. You can run the Switchback 10K. I mean, that's impressive.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. So I always say, like, maybe get out there, like, once a week and try to get those in just to incorporate that stimulus of running, getting your form down, because that's something that you're, you know, it's going to be hard to adapt to if you're just going on a step mill or if you're only using a bike or an elliptical, because that's a forced movement. You're kind of, you're confined to that movement for, it's moving for you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's one thing I always tell people, especially if they're considering doing some type of run.
And I think especially with people that want to start training for the Boilermaker that maybe already do cardio consistently, at that point to train for the Boilermaker, it's not even just training like your body, your respiratory system, your cardiovascular system to get used to that. At that point, it's just getting used to the stimulus.
Absolutely. Because generally, I mean, you can make a ton of, you know, aerobic, you can increase your aerobic capacity significantly.
Absolutely.
Just through doing a low impact cardio. And as a matter of fact, there's even running magazines now that are talking about, you know, if you're doing tons of cardio and you're trying to improve your VO2, low impact's better. It's got a better recovery rate, and for all intents and purposes, you could still add the running, the outdoor running, as a stimulus in. So
yeah,
it's more efficient.
Yeah, I definitely think that, you know, a lot of people, they get caught up, how much should I be running? I want to train for the Boilermaker, yada, yada. But, you know, I think it depends what your goals are, what you're doing aside from that. If you're just running and you don't do any form of weight training, then you can maybe afford to run outdoors a little bit more.
Sure.
But those that care about their gym performance, running in that high impact, it definitely can be detrimental to your gym progress and to your weightlifting.
Absolutely. There's certainly be some interference there. And I think that, you know, we get a lot of people that, you know, want to train like endurance athletes, but they want to look like, you know, fitness cover models. So
yeah.
If you look, and everyone's always points out the reference of look at endurance athletes and then look at sprinters.
Yes, perfect example. Yeah.
So
it's true.
Just the amount of muscularity that they have compared to an endurance athlete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously they're training different parts of their body, different muscle types as well, and they might have a different muscle type. They might have more type 1 than type 2.
Exactly.
So
depending
there's situations there that could vary.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as cardio, what would you say your favorite cardio is?
None.
I knew that was coming. Cardio.
Exactly.
Cardio Spanish.
What does that word mean? Can you spell it, please? No, I mean, I don't hate cardio. You know, I think, for an example, we recently just lowered my miss sessions.
Yes.
And I've been doing the elliptical instead of the stairs.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't hate the elliptical. Do I enjoy it? I mean, I guess I'm indifferent. It doesn't bother me. It's refreshing to sweat.
Yeah.
But I have to say I probably enjoy HIIT the most.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I get that a lot from people. Like, can I have more HIIT? More HIIT?
Yeah.
I'm like, man, you're on two sessions right now. We're kind of deep in your cut. And we'll go into that, too. We're going to go into HIIT and maybe, you know, some pros and cons of HIIT. For all intents and purposes, you know, HIIT's a very good means of cardio. So, but I think for me, I really don't like cardio. But if I were had to do it, I you know, certainly like miss better.
Really?
Miss is probably my favorite, because I can just jam out and I can probably, you know, I can get my laptop out, do a couple things here and there.
See,
but
that's the thing. At this point, you can multitask. You can read a book.
Yes.
You can write.
Yeah.
Everyone else is panting.
You know, yeah. And the fact of getting off that thing, you feel a little sweaty, you feel accomplished, you know, you burned a little bit more calorie in that time lot that day. But
it's
for
a
the most
bit
part,
like euphoric.
It's right.
I can
and
see
it,
that.
You know what? It's been a long time since I've done miss cardio, and I really attribute that to just becoming really heavy. No, I'm just kidding. actually, I purchased a treadmill desk. You can probably see it from here, but I got a treadmill desk.
I actually can't.
And I just during the day, you know, most of the day, I you know, it's in front of a computer screen. So I felt that, and I remember sitting down, I remember like my first like 7+ hour day at a computer, and I go to a list, I'm like, I just want to get out and just walk around. I got to move because yeah. I just can't be, I've never been the person to sit still for that long.
Yeah.
So I went online, I got a treadmill desk. That was the best purchase I ever made. So I'll jam on there and, you know, the first, and here we go. We're going to go back into the soreness thing. When I first got that thing, I was probably doing about 8,000, maybe 9,000 steps per day. I know people talk about steps. We'll go into that too. I think that's a good topic. But afterwards, I got the treadmill desk the first day, and I was like 32,000 at treadmill desk.
Oh my God.
And that was just from what the treadmill desk said. And I woke up like 2 days later. I did 2 days in a row of it. I'm like 30,000 plus steps on that thing. And I'm like sore. I'm like, oh, what? I can't even get out of bed.
This?
What's going on with me? And Alyssa is like, well, you just walked around, you know, the U.S. like twice.
You walked the Boilermaker and back.
Oh my goodness. So I had to actually reduce it. And I would do like, okay, I'll do 15,000 today. And I would like work my way into it and just get that in use to that adaptation.
Yeah.
I've also learned, okay, maybe I should work my posture because if I'm walking that long, you don't realize you might be leaning on your elbows or you might be, opening your hips up a little bit too much. And then
and
I don't want it to become a negative thing either.
Yeah, looking at the computer screen.
Yeah.
Or
like
maybe
upright
like
desks. People, new things are like in offices, people are getting upright desks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And those are fantastic, but I encourage anyone that has access to an upright desk, be conscious of your posture, because these people leaning off to the side and everything else, and that
leaning on
an issue.
Straining, leaning forward.
Yeah, and you'll feel like your chest, your traps and your back and everything else starts to hurt, and your hips.
Yeah.
So just be really, really conscious of that. But yeah, so that is a form of low intensity, steady state cardio all day long. Very much. And you know what? And I don't even say that my heart rate gets raised awfully off baseline.
And especially probably not at this point because,
I just kind of cruise along. My heart rate stays between 60 and 70. Resting is probably like 54, I think. My heart rate's pretty low.
Okay.
But yeah, I know. And I think that's going to bring us into the first form of cardio. So we'll go into a couple different forms of cardio. We'll go into our recommendations and, maybe give you guys more of an idea of what these three types of cardio can do. And you guys can apply it to what you think might be best for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really think that all these forms of cardio have a time and place for them.
Absolutely. Like how you said, people, they enjoy HIIT and they ask for more HIIT.
Yep.
And, it's great and there's definitely a time and place for it, but at the same time, too much isn't necessarily a good thing.
Yeah.
So I guess while we're on the topic of, you walking on the treadmill, we can get into LISS. So LISS is low intensity steady state cardio, and it's pretty much exactly what it sounds like for those who don't know. So I don't know. I guess it's a form of cardio. It definitely is.
Yeah.
But in terms of like breaking a sweat, I would say it's
very light chance of you breaking a sweat during low intensity steady state cardio. I know some you may, I think it depends on the person, and this will be a good, and we'll get into this in a second, but who should use LISS.
Mm-hmm.
Because low intensity steady state cardio is basically, if you're looking at most gym equipment will still have that max heart rate aerobic
target heart rate,
and it will go into like
the
fat
different
burning
zones.
Zone. The fat burning zone. It's usually like a low intensity area,
and usually the heart rates in those areas are near resting, maybe just a couple dozen beats above that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, and for the low intensity steady state cardio, and that's like they're referring to the fat burning zone. And it's kind of nonsense if you think about it. We'll go into that.
It is.
Really quick.
I think it's taken almost. It's a literal term, but it's taken out of its context.
Yes.
So the fat burning zone, it kind of is what it sounds like and isn't. You're not burning your body fat, but you're using fat, free fatty acids within your blood, within the muscles that you're working to fuel that exercise. And
exactly,
I guess that's maybe the most simplest way to put it, not to confuse people.
No, that's exactly what it is, because when we get our heart rate to about 50% of its max, we start using a ratio of about 60% fat and 40% glycogen.
And that's just a means of energy.
This is a means of energy. So our body uses
exercise.
Energy on in certain levels, intensities, and lengths of cardio.
Mm-hmm.
So People got that and like, wow, well, then I can burn a bunch of fat. And they think it's straight coming from adipose tissue, which is what you're going to see, this body fat on your stomach and your hips and on your thighs. Not necessarily. And as a matter of fact, most of that fat is going to be coming from intramuscular triglycerides, which are, you know, in your legs, your glutes, or excuse me, quads, hamstrings, glutes, because it, most cardio is usually lower body driven.
Exactly.
So even if you are, and you are burning fat,
but it's not,
it's a fuel source. It's not
body fat.
Yeah, it's
that
not
you're
like,
burning.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like coming off of your hips. Like I can feel my stomach getting tighter.
Because,
most of it's going to be non-appearance.
Yes, and if you think of it literally, I mean, you look at even the quote target heart rates for the quote fat burning zone, and they're low heart rates. Like, does it make sense? Like, take a step back. Does it make sense to work less and get better results? You know
right.
what I mean?
Exactly.
It just, if you look at it like that, it just doesn't make sense. No one's going to tell you, yeah, don't work as hard so you burn body fat.
Yeah, exactly. That, yeah, work lower, like do less.
Yeah.
Do less and you'll definitely, okay, you know. And it literally just comes from, you know, going up into like a moderate intensity or higher intensity that you're up in like the 75, 80% range.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the fuel source is switched. Now you're burning more glycogen to fat. So at the end of the day, it comes down to how many calories you're actually burning within that time frame.
Right. Because, you know, I was either listening to a podcast or reading something, I forget what it was, but it pretty much compared lists in a sense to almost resting activity. And it used the example, you know, if someone's told to burn, say, 200 calories for their list session, and you look and it's taking them an hour and a half, are they sitting still? You know what I mean?
I agree. It's like, where's your heart rate? Like,
exactly.
Did you fall asleep mid session? And I see that often, and, you know, and I'll see it in, you know, what means are you tracking your heart rate? Some people use different monitors, and maybe they're, and sometimes it's often if you use like a wristwatch, I won't get into any company brand names, but if you use like a wristwatch, maybe that's becoming disconnected and it's not tracking your calories burned during that disconnected moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I always see, if I see someone taking 60 minutes to burn 200 calories, oh man, there's something issue.
Yeah.
Certainly not. That's way too long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially then you kind of ask, like, okay, where was your heart rate? What was it, 145, 150?
What were you actually doing?
Yeah, seriously. So I think that, you know, low intensity is certainly not a bad option for cardio for someone that might be starting out. Maybe they are a sedentary person.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're just starting out in their weight loss journey. They're not even nearly, you know, adapted to movement patterns yet.
Right.
Just getting themselves, maybe even good as a warm-up. But I don't want, like, I wouldn't set up, you know, someone that has to lose a bunch of weight that hasn't even hit the gym yet.
Exactly.
And we're going to start doing miss and we're going to add in a HIIT session. I mean, that's not logical.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe even not doing any cardio at all. Just having, let's
I was
going to
say, or even maybe I would say that list could probably be used for someone who maybe has a little bit of gym experience. Maybe, you know, they're a couple weeks into their program working out, so they're used to moving with their workouts and their weight training a little bit more, but maybe they're not ready to sacrifice calories quite yet.
Yeah.
So you give them a little bit of list. I'm sorry.
Yeah, a little bit of list. And not only does, you know, and list is not as daunting when you first start out doing cardio, like, okay, I can walk on the treadmill for, you know, 15 minutes or 10 minutes. I can do that. I can pedal a bike for 10 minutes. That's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that just starts getting that routine going where, okay, I'm going to do cardio after my lift.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. You got 20 minutes of cardio and you didn't really do much, you know, but you did it. It was the act of actually getting into that and in that time frame.
Yeah.
So you can actually structure, like for me, I like to do lists generally as a time rather than a calorie.
Yeah.
So some people still do calorie, you know, time versus calories, but
I think it depends, because with lists, you're not really doing it to burn the calories. It's more so just, I would say, for the cardiovascular, the respiratory benefits, just to, you know, start getting your body used to that kind of stimulus.
Yeah. And, you know, you could use lists as a baseline, I guess. You could use, you know, I'm going to start lists and I'll have you do calories at 200, or, you know, 200 calories would be a long time. Maybe like 100 calories of lists.
Yeah.
That way I can get a baseline so that when I do bring you to miss.
Yeah.
Or moderate intensity, steady state, that I can see, okay, they're definitely working a little bit harder than they were than their list, so their times are a little bit different.
Yeah.
So it was obviously going to take a little bit less time to do the moderate intensity than it would the low intensity.
And we can even get into myths.
Yeah.
So you kind of just define it. So myths, moderate intensity, steady state.
Yes.
So this, I think there's a very fine line. Some people, I think, maybe don't put it at a moderate pace, or some people kind
very,
of abuse it.
This is a broad.
It is.
This is definitely a broad way to do it because, you know, like you're saying, some people don't do it enough or don't do it as hard.
Yeah.
And they're close to lists.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are just going ham. And just, it's
probably close to, I don't know anyone who does that.
High intensity. I won't even say interval because it's just straight high intensity.
Yeah. Which you've got to be pretty conditioned, I would say, or at least. No, I would say that, to be able to tolerate it for that long.
Yeah.
But myths usually, you usually prescribe it for people on a calorie to be burned basis.
Yes. You'll have people that do timed. For me, as far as doing calories burned, it's more for consistency than anything else.
I was going to say, because I feel like at a point where you introduce myths, you know, they're maybe wanting to dig a little deeper in their cut or in their fat loss journey. So it's, you know, more of a consistent and accurate way of manipulating their calories.
Sure. And I think that, and it makes, you make a good point there too, and to even bring that up, is that, you know, we talked about this before, but people look at like, okay, I have 250 calories. That's 250 calories straight that are coming off the calories I take in for the day or the week. Not necessarily.
Mm-mm.
Because that's your only... raising your, you're going to burn calories no matter if you're doing cardio or not. You all day long you burn calories during so spontaneous physical activity Dana's referring to, or non-exercise activity with thermogenesis for
say
your geeks out there.
Fast.
I can't even talk.
So that's basically like your spontaneous movement. Like right now I'm wiggling my legs, I might flick my fingers, like shift my legs, cross my legs, so stuff like that.
Yep.
Even for you, I would say like you walking on, you know, your treadmill while you're working, that can definitely be a means of increasing your NEAT.
Yeah. And it's funny too. I mean, you can look at NEAT and there's a couple studies that are coming out now. They're a little bit broader range. Like there's like 400 and something, maybe even more, maybe like 600 participants. And so they're, I want to say it was anywhere from like 400 to 2,100 calories more. Are 2,500 calories more than their basal metabolic rate.
Hmm.
And that's not even talking about like thermic effect of food and everything else
right.
that goes into your metabolic rate
right.
itself, but off your basal metabolic rate. And that's just the amount of calories you need to sustain life,
mm-hmm.
just to breathe, your heart to beat, to sustain, you know, body temperature.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, that's a pretty impressive range, and that's obviously knowing, and that's what we set up during, you know, our client interviews. And finding out what type of person this is. Obviously, like we talked about before in previous podcasts, that, you know, a construction worker that's working a jackhammer, walking up and down compared to the person that sits at a desk all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly going to have a little bit more spontaneous physical activity in the construction worker.
Yeah, exactly. And not only, that's a perfect point. I was just going to touch on that. That, you know, plays a role in, you know, maybe how much miss you're prescribed or what your calories might be at. Because if you're someone who, say, is a construction worker, you're a nurse, you know, you're working 12, 16 hours nonstop, you know, you might benefit from a little bit more calories. And, you know, it's just that everyone's different.
Right.
There's
exactly.
so many different things to take into consideration.
Yeah. If you think about it, too, is that we look at when we set up your calories, you set up your cardio, we look at this as a balance of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so no matter what, we try to get every client within the same same energy balance, really, the same deficit. So I want people to lose tempo at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It might look different. Someone might be eating 4,000 calories. The other person might be eating 1,600 calories.
Mm-hmm.
But the rate of loss is going to be about the same.
Yeah.
You know, or you're going to target range. I shouldn't say, you know, you're going to go like percent of body weight is basically. Is
everyone is going to lose this every week.
Yeah. It's, you know, you don't go like, yeah, all my clients can lose 1 to 2 pounds a week. It's like, okay, what about the one that weighs 100 pounds?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a lot of body mass a week.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess it's not really that much, but you could, depending on their body composition. Either way, yeah, you're going to go by a percentage of body weight and then probably taking consideration in body composition as well. So. Someone shredded at 140, you're probably not going to get 3% losses a week.
Exactly.
You could, but
we could go on and on for hours about this because there's so many different scenarios.
Sure. But, you know, to go into MIS, and you were talking about, you know, prescribing MIS and maybe
looking
not.
Looking at, like, overall, like, calories, you know.
Sure.
Like, how you had touched on, you know, someone might say, okay, I'm burning 250 calories, so shouldn't I be able to eat those extra 250? And at least with us, I mean, I can't speak for everyone else out there, but at least with us, you know, we are already taking those things into consideration.
Yes.
Kind of the same concept as whether to count net carbs, total carbs, not to get off on a tangent, but just to compare it to that. You know, we've already taken all of those things into consideration, and prescribing MIS as a means of, okay, you're going to burn these amount of calories. That's because we've already looked at, you know, your weekly calories, your caloric intake, and, you know, adjusted the cardio to
training.
Kind of. Yes, exactly.
Frequency of training, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, because you get people that say, oh, I can only train 30 minutes and twice a week. So obviously it's going to take into consideration how much energy you're going to take in and your lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as far as MIS goes, I agree 100%. I'm certainly on board with that because, you know, you get people that are active all day long. You know, I got two guys right now, they're twins, and they're both in contest prep. They eat like horses, and they barely do any cardio. And they're very active. And even doing MIS at that point is like, okay, we're going to probably touch maybe a little bit more on HIIT because in the later phases of the diet. But to be honest with you, if someone's making progress,
why change it?
Right, we're not going to add in cardio just because it's, you know, something, you know, that everyone does. It's part of the process. Not necessarily. Mm-hmm. So some people can get away with that. But you know, it is a small part of the process, and for like 90% of people, they're going to have to use a little bit of a little aerobic exercise to get really lean.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's just that it's a tool. It's something to help. And not only that, but you know, that aerobic endurance and, you know, increasing your aerobic capacity, that's going to help, you know, people in their lifts as well. And I think that's something that a lot of people maybe don't realize.
Yeah. What do you think about over prescribing cardio? Miss or less?
I think that's definitely that's.
Yes, it's happened. I know.
It has.
Well, you can talk about it.
We can talk about myself.
Exactly.
It happened to me. You know, there was, I would say, maybe the past year or so, I've kind of just been at a maintenance phase. And, you know, I might be, I would say, loosely tracking, or I was loosely tracking my macros for about a year. And my macros were a little bit higher, so taking into consideration, you know, the days that I might have went over, even days that I might have
like
went
under. Like
an
85% tracker.
Yeah, exactly. So at that point, you know, we pretty much just kept cardio constant, and it was a significant amount. I mean, now that I look, it's only been a couple weeks since we've dropped it, but I look back and, you know, doing 350 to 400 calorie misses three times a week, and I look back and I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah,
but
now we're like 200s.
Yeah.
We're going to snip that right in half, cut that in half.
But it's a perfect example. You know, my body adapted at that point. My aerobic endurance, you know, I would say it was probably at its near max potential. I mean,
I'm ready for the Boilermaker.
No. Let's not talk crazy.
Endurance part. For endurance purposes, maybe.
I'm probably a bad listener because even though it was supposed to be MIS, I was probably near, I would say, like VT2 the entire time.
Yeah.
There's no talking to me, maybe the first 10 minutes.
Yeah. So basically, when we prescribe MIS, we like to define it. People always ask us about, like, well, what heart rate should it be? And it varies from person to person.
It's different for everyone.
Right, because I can get somebody that's walking my stairs, and guess what? Their heart rate is 190.
Yeah.
And they're barely moving. So we like to say... and you can go, actually, you can explain it. You already got on the VT2. When we're going to ventilated thresholds.
So I would say, you know, MIS, a lot of you probably don't know what ventilatory thresholds are, but there's...
Any ACE trainers out there might know.
There's VT1 and VT2. So VT1 is basically you, at around that threshold, you should be able to talk a little bit uncomfortably, but definitely can maintain a conversation.
Quite freely, you can say the ABCs and not like have to, you know, gasp for life.
Might have to like take a breath between them, but you can definitely hold a conversation. It's like, I guess I would compare it a little bit to like going for like a brisk walk with someone, maybe.
Sure.
And you're talking with that, you know, your heart rate's definitely getting up. And then, you know, VT2, that's basic. Your like anaerobic threshold. So basically that's like a really high heart rate zone, you know, that usually people can't sustain that for long at all. That's like looking at like a quick, like several second sprint, like literally balls to the wall.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. So anywhere in between there. So I always tell people like, well, you should be able to say use ABC and then take a breath.
Yeah.
D, E, F, G, and then breathe. Okay. But You should be uncomfortable. You should be, you know, you should feel that you're moving. You can feel your heart rate is elevated over baseline. You should be sweating.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you should be able to hold a conversation without feeling you're going
to
faint.
Exactly. Like it should be a little bit uncomfortable, but not to the point where you're like gasping.
And then that's when a point where you just tone it down a little bit. Maybe you're going for a little bit of a stride on the elliptical and then you can back it down to like a really, really slow walk. Maybe you get off that, maybe go on a bike. Because if you can get there quickly, then maybe move to a bike or even like just a walking on elliptical.
Mm-hmm. So. And, you know, these things are different for everyone. I know Alyssa especially.
Oh, my goodness.
Her heart rate during her miss sessions is pretty high. And like
it's 170. Yeah. She hits like 170 without a problem. And the thing is, she has to slow down. And she's just going on a stepper like at a slow pace.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take much for her to raise heart rate. And it's been like that for a long time. I mean, and it'll Mine's be like that same. Throughout her entire entire contest prep, all of her cuts. And I mean, we don't go crazy on cardio. I think at one point she was on a ton of cardio, but it was like more short strides. It was like 8 sessions. Mm-hmm. They're like 25 minutes a piece.
I remember seeing her. She posted on her calendar. Again.
and that's where we learned like, okay, and that was, you know, that was a few years back. Mm-hmm. That was really like, okay, now the next time you decide to do show, it's going to be like 1, 2, 3, we're going to cluster these shows together.
Yeah.
And then you're going to do an off season because you cannot sustain this for that long. And there you go. There's aerobic adaptations and just.
And at that point, it's not doing any good. Games.
We're going into a ton of things there. Just dieting that hard, staying that lean.
Exactly. Impossible. Exactly. So like, for example, with Alyssa, she maintains, you know, that miss pace at a pretty high heart rate, whereas other people, you know, they might be 140, 150 and they're struggling to, you know, increase their heart rate anymore, but that's what their heart rate is.
Yeah.
So basically with miss, you know, you want to be able to hold a light conversation, you know, maybe say the ABCs a little bit uncomfortably, but you should, I would say that that's a good pace. You should still be able to talk.
Yeah. And if you're looking at calories per minute, you're probably between 6 and 8 and 8 calories per minute. Anything more than that, I mean, you're kind of pushing it. I know that personally, I know I can burn like 10 to 15 without an even issue.
Which you see that a lot with certain people.
And I'm the same way I'm saying the way. And, you know, maybe it contributed to taking a bunch of caffeine and Yohimbe before my cardio session.
That's fine.
I got stuff to do. I can't. 500 calories. See you later. 20 minutes.
At that point, it's not even miss. It's
don't
literally
do that.
Just,
disclaimer. I do not recommend anyone do that.
No. At that point, it's just high intensity. Not even like high intensity interval, not HIIT. It's just high intensity.
High intensity. Granted, the lucky part about me is that when I did my last contest prep, I did 3 sessions of cardio a week. That's it.
How much?
500 calories. 1,500 calories of cardio. It was three sessions.
3 sessions, only though, compared to the norm.
And it was
probably
close to HIIT because I was moving pretty good.
Yeah.
Towards the end, I was pretty lethargic. I tanked myself.
I'm sure.
I tanked myself pretty good there. Definitely a learning experience. If any, like, you need to get stage lean to understand what people go through when they to get to the stage. You just have to because I've gotten really lean, but then I've pressed it. You know, I've gotten to the point where, like, I hit like my first really deep cut. I was probably like 177, 176. I was like, oh, this is impressive.
That's really small for a while, but
never again. But my contest prep, I hit to like 168.
Wow.
Then that was when I was, yeah.
And depleted. How tall are you? Give everyone
I'm 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
I was a big, lanky
Your
dude.
BMI was probably like 18.
How about that? So I did like blood work and everything afterwards, and I remember my doctor's like, well, your BMI is perfect. I'm like, doc, I'm sure every hormone in my body is suppressed right now.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I am not healthy. Probably not healthy.
But, so they call you perfect.
Yeah. Oh, you look okay. I'm like, really? Okay.
So you touched on how you, at that point in your prep, you were only doing miss. So I guess my question for you is, at what point would you start to incorporate HIIT or high intensity interval training?
So for me, I did HIIT throughout the prep. I just, maybe the last 8 weeks I pulled it. And that was because of, I noticed it was interfering with my training. I noticed a significant drop. And it's normal to see a drop in weight training as when you get closer at the end of your cut.
Yeah.
Or you've done a prolonged cut. To give you guys an example, my contest prep was 26 weeks long, in which I, 18 weeks is really when I said, okay, bam, I'm honing in on it.
Mm-hmm.
Where I usually tell people like 10 weeks out that we can say, okay, 10 weeks out, leave no stone unturned.
Yeah.
Unless you, you know, you're 10 weeks out and you look 20. I mean, then we got an issue.
Yeah.
You know, we can kind of go into different approaches later on in life. You know, people hire you for a reason and they want to go to stage, and
mm-hmm.
whether it's, you try to advise people not to do it, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was doing it from probably like 18 weeks out to like 12 weeks out. And then I think I pulled it around like 10 weeks out. And simply because I started noticing, it was starting to interfere with my training in the training program that I was on specifically. Cause if you look at HIIT and when you should probably prescribe it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was doing a lot of lower body HIIT. So I was doing an elliptical with a resistance
mm-hmm.
and, it was starting to interfere with my lower body training. And then I realized, okay, I got two sessions of HIIT through the week and they were 15 minutes apiece. In which I did 10 sprints. So it was 2.5 warm-ups, 2.5 minute cool down and 10 sprints.
Mm-hmm.
And I started noticing, I was like, okay, cause I'm tying in this within 48 hours of a lower body training.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at studies now, which I didn't look back then, I probably should have had a little bit better intel on that.
It's a learning experience.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're looking at muscle soreness and everything else lasting up to 72 hours. I mean, 48 hours is like, 36 hours, I think it was a peak. 40 hours is starting to subside. 72 mm-hmm. hours is close to baseline, but it's still okay. Elevated. So if you think about prescribing HIIT, it's good to probably land those on days that are rest days. They're probably about 48 hours away from a lower body training.
Which makes sense.
Yeah. So, like, I would actually do, my lower body days were relatively moderate volume,
mm-hmm.
Especially when I was getting towards the end there. I didn't do too many hypertrophy days. I started splitting up legs, like doing a lot more hamstring work on one day and,
mm-hmm.
Started doing a little more quad work on another, and I started mixing like full body workouts in as well. And then I did some added in a lagging body parts day just to, subconsciously like, okay, my biceps suck. I got to keep hitting them a little bit harder, but they're not going to grow. That's like the prep brain. But anyways, even that, not to get off a tangent. So HIIT throughout the middle of the prep was good. It really helped me propel fat loss. Cause I knew I hit mm-hmm. a plateau around 18 weeks. And I said, okay,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to put in some HIIT here.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I'm dating myself too. Cause this was like 3 years ago. So I'm trying to like think of exactly, I wish I wrote it all down and have, a big goal and journey to show you guys, but kind of just shooting from the hip here. But mm-hmm. yeah, probably like 18 weeks out, I said, okay, I'm plateauing. I think I was hitting, where I had a tempo. And I said, I'm going to add some HIIT in.
Mm-hmm.
Add one session in. Bam. First week was good. Went about 2 weeks. Plateau a little bit. I'll add one more mm-hmm. session in. Recovery was still really good. And then I started noticing my squat was really just plummeting. I was like, okay.
And
my legs were one of those things. I'm a 6 feet tall
guy.
I was like, okay, I got to make sure that I'm not having any of this stuff interfere with my training too much. And then
I pulled it. I think that's a perfect example as to how, you definitely can overprescribe cardio, especially HIIT. HIIT, I think, is very easy to overprescribe. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I see people coming off like they're like 4 or 5 HIIT sessions a week. I'm like, I've never prescribed any more than 3 sessions of HIIT for somebody.
And if it was, it was like, I don't think I've ever had. I might have. No, I don't think I.
Unless they're short. I used to have 12-minute HIITs I'd give people, and they're like 6 minutes. They're like 6 sprints total. I did a few of those, but. And like here's the thing too, and some people do HIIT different than I do,
mm-hmm.
20-second sprints are generally the most I'll have someone sprint for a prolonged period
it's
of time.
It's hard.
But 20 seconds is good. So if you look at HIIT studies, most of those people are sprinting until failure.
Yeah.
Those aren't the type of sprints that we're doing. Those are effective.
Mm-hmm.
But we add in a little bit of moderate intensity studies, say, with the HIIT as well. So
yeah. And you have like to think too, like depending on, the person, are they really. Like, for example, use the example, someone performing HIIT maybe 4 times a week. At that point, is it really HIIT? It makes you wonder. There's absolutely no way that they're performing,
Exactly. And, that's the thing, too, is that above all, and I think this has been said throughout the community multiple times, above all, we got to remember that we're Either, you know, we're trying to enhance our physiques, and through that we do that through weights. So these weights come first, not
they
cardio.
Do, yeah.
We're not endurance athletes.
No, we're not.
And this, and if you guys are listening to this and you guys are endurance athletes, you know, that's probably another conversation that we can have about endurance athletes. I'm not going to pretend that I'm an endurance athlete specialist. That's not what we do.
Right.
We certainly can tell you about endurance training, but I wouldn't go out and say I'm a running coach now.
Right, exactly. You know? There's a time and place for it all. You know, I mean, if you're someone who maybe is just not really doing any weightlifting and HIIT training is the only training that you're doing, I would say, okay, maybe that's a totally different subject than someone that's weight training. I remember you told me once, think of HIIT as another leg day. And that's pretty much stuck with me, and I think about that. And even when people ask me, when should I be doing this, etc., I think about that because it should be intense, and it shouldn't be something that you can perform easily after a leg day, the day after.
Exactly.
Something that you shouldn't even be performing it then, let alone
that's
before.
That's where there's a whole 48-hour thing comes in, and, you know, it's just, and a lot of people are like, oh, man, I should start spreading these things out a little bit better. Because you start noticing, and that's why I have people document when they're doing their cardio.
Mm-hmm.
And you start like, okay, well, this person's doing cardio like the day before their leg day. It's like, man, and it's their high rep leg day, and then that's why their performance is plummeting.
Exactly.
So, yeah, certainly a thing to think about. I wanted to touch on something, but it's kind of slipping my mind. Oh, you know what? Another thing you mentioned that, you know, doing weightlifting and HIIT or what type of training HIIT is. Think about it this way. Most HIIT is elevating your heart rate in intervals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're going from, you know, resting or between sets at like 70, 80, and then next thing you know, it goes up to like 140, 150 during a set, and it's lasting about 30 to 60 seconds.
Yeah.
Which is generally what HIIT cardio people prescribe, 30 to 60 seconds for all-out sprints. That's the same thing as lifting weights.
Yeah.
So,
no.
In a sense.
Yeah.
Depending on how you want to structure your intensity of your lifts, and this is more for like a newer lifter or something like that, they might want to structure that. That's already, it shows the same effect as what these HIIT studies are showing too. So lifting weights, you know, you're doing intervals of higher intensity loads. Now it's not till absolute failure. Some sets might go to failure, and your heart rate might not get as elevated, but it's still an interval.
Depending
effect.
On the rep range and stuff like that, or even you know. Like total weight that you're lifting.
Exactly. So there's another thing that say, okay, maybe I don't need to start anybody on HIIT just yet, or even cardio at all. Maybe I get them into the training and, you know, maybe do a little bit of concurrent training, maybe a little cardio through the sets and everything else like
and
that.
And especially HIIT early on, I mean, I don't know. I feel like you definitely have to build up to that, you know. You're not going to be able to perform period or even not only that, but like aerobically, you're not going to be able to withstand it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's definitely something that you would have to work up to.
It's a progression.
Yeah, even it's those of us that have worked up to it and do HIIT, it's never easier.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And it shouldn't get easier, because here's the thing. Once it starts getting easy, like I'll see people cruising along, like, kind of like nonchalantly sprinting. You know what's funny? Because when I see my clients in person, I'm like, bro, you got to start sprinting.
Yeah.
That's not a sprint. What are you doing? I want to go there and start coaching through a sprint. And then it starts getting easy for people. Like, okay, let's add some resistance to your sprints. And they're
exactly.
like, well, okay, you're an evil scientist. What's wrong with you? Sprints and resistance.
If
well,
people
if you look at
aren't
a lot of these sprint
staring,
studies, like,
you're doing it wrong.
Seriously. Like article I ever read was a group of cyclists that did it on a Wingate bike, which is basically it looks like a spin bike that has a couple weights that has a belt around the wheel, and the weights pull down and hold traction to the wheel. So as you get fatigued, this wheel starts slowing down, and
it harder.
Two, three sets. These guys. That's where all these studies come from. Like, oh, there's the amount of hypertrophy you can get from these sprints, and then we go into like a. You know, people are talking about this epoch, and it's then. And for anyone who doesn't know what epoch is,
yeah, let's touch on that.
Yeah, so so epoch is elevated post-exercise oxygen consumption, and that is basically the rate of. It's basically they call it afterburn, and how many calories you're burning after the bout.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So everyone's really like promoting this epoch thing after the whole sprint session.
I think there's a large misconception
huge.
With it, similar to the misconception with the fat burning zone. yeah, you might burn a little bit of calories after the exercise is done. And you do, what did the statistics say? 7% of total calories during the endurance exercise is what you're burning after the fact.
7% additional during the exercise. Like, that's...
that's minuscule.
Yeah, and you're looking at, I think they had numbers too, was like, there you go, 1880 calories over a 9-hour period. Which 80 calories. I mean, here's the thing. If you look at 3,500 calories in a pound of mass, 80 calories is not much.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely is beneficial. For example, you know, someone's hitting a plateau, and you want to incorporate a little bit of HIIT just to keep things moving, yes, as you would say.
Yeah, no, and it's the thing. And, you know, here, there's pros and cons. So the pro could be, okay, EPOC. But the EPOC is just very minuscule.
It is.
So another pro could be, it's kind of hard to develop an adaptation to it. It's
exactly.
Short bursts of sprinting, and you can mm-hmm. burn a ton of calories in a small amount of time.
Absolutely.
And it keeps it interesting, too.
You're right.
I mean, it does. For most people, like, okay, I'm doing something, you know, for 30 seconds, and I'm off, and I'm going back, and you're focusing on just doing those mm-hmm. bounds. Next thing you know, it's done, it's over, and you're sweating. You feel like a Greek god.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Cons, though.
Cons, you know.
Unless you have any more pros.
I mean, I would definitely say, I guess if you want to get into, like, the scientific aspect of
it.
You
go ahead.
It can definitely increase your aerobic capacity.
Absolutely.
You know, make you more efficient at that. And at that point, you know, can increase your aerobic efficiency, like, in other things that you do.
Absolutely.
Change the appearance, you know, your body composition.
Sure.
Just because it's targeting, you know, different muscle fibers.
Exactly. I agree 100% with that. That's what I'm saying. Like, we have people that will do, like, one, they can only do, like, one leg day a week.
Mm-hmm.
I just gave Dana a look. It might be. Dana does one leg day a week and just crushes it.
Dana does not
Dana's
need to
blessed.
Train legs.
I want Dana's legs, okay?
You can have them.
You'll be walking around in stilts.
We'll just switch legs.
We're going to trade legs. Oh, God. I'm just picturing that, too, like his little torso.
I know.
Because Dana's stepping over the bench.
Little rabbit hop over the bench.
Oh, God. We have too much fun in the podcast, too.
We do. But, no, I think I train legs. No, maybe it's once a week. No, it's maybe like one and a half.
Yeah, there's well,
like
the way your cycle's set up. Yeah. Yeah, right. So, yeah, we can go into, we'll go into cycles and training weeks, like, you know, maybe another day.
Yeah, another
podcast. I get that question a lot, and that would be a good, that should probably go on the FAQ sheet. I'm pretty sure it is. I've gone over it a couple of times. But anyways, so it could be another means or way of looking at doing some lower body training or just kind of giving yourself a little stimulation there.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously being able to add a little resistance. You know, it's not like doing squats. You're not, you know, there's going to be very minimal progressive overload there.
Exactly.
So.
Yep. And I think, you know, if you want to get into the cons about HIIT, I think the cons kind of across the board with any of these things is, you know, too much can definitely be detrimental, especially with HIIT. We talked on that already, you know, how it can affect other things.
Absolutely. It could definitely play a role in interfering with a lot of training,
yeah.
Especially like lower body training.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it depends on what kind of HIIT you're doing too. Some people do HIIT on the rower. Some people do HIIT on the assault bike. Like I got the assault bikes are coming back hard. Those things are awesome. And you're doing a lot of upper body too because you're pushing.
Mm-hmm.
So to take
into
consideration.
Some people might even do them outside on a track. I know when the weather gets warmer, you
yeah,
know. And that
are,
sprinting is totally different.
Yeah,
then.
I love when people are like, I'm going to do it on the track. It sounds like more fun. I'm like, go right ahead.
Yeah.
I've done that a couple times. I'm like, man, like I thought I was.
What did I just do?
Yeah, my ego feels better when I'm on the elliptical.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going back to that thing. I can burn 700 calories in 45 minutes.
Yeah, right?
Wow. That was true. Actually, you know, Alyssa and I, because she burns crap loads of calories, and like the highest ever cardio, I guess you can call it HIIT. It's only 15 sprints, but it turns out to be a 45-minute HIIT.
Mm-hmm.
I was nearing 800 calories in a session.
Oh my God.
I was just ripping through these sprints. But it was becoming a competition. I was like, all right, this is not even safe. I'm doing 45 minutes of straight just HIIT. Like I'm just warming up, just flying.
Yeah,
the
machine says if you feel faint, dizzy.
Yeah,
get off, and that's you the entire time.
I wake up with a head injury.
Yeah.
That's it. But, yeah, cons would be something interfering. Anything's going to interfere with training, and that would be a con for any type of
cardio.
You know, maybe even miss. Lists has a lower possibility of doing so. It could, depending on what you're doing as far as your list goes. But I think to any effect that if you're fat loss specifically because you're restricting your calorie intake,
mm-hmm.
You're probably going to see some downregulation in strength.
Mm-hmm.
Something to be expected, something to really hone in on
mm-hmm.
Your range of motion. Don't try to force something. I see a lot of people do that with their squats. Their squats start to stink and they're not getting depth. And I think a really good point to that too is that as you drop body fat, there's body fat that supports joints.
Mm-hmm.
So your joints are going to be, you might be a little bit more mobile as you lose body fat. So
mm-hmm.
something to consider, especially females, when you start losing body fat in the thighs, historically women store fat there.
Mm-hmm.
And they notice that they're getting deeper in their squats, but it's harder to come out because they haven't trained themselves, because in a way, body fat would be used as a cushion to bring you back up. So that's
mm-hmm.
why you might see a little bit heavier powerlifters that are moving big weight. So, you know, and then if they drop body fat, maybe they're not moving as much, not necessarily because they're calorie restricted, but because it might be a body fat thing.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
So,
and I think, you know, cons across the board. We touched a little bit on cons, you know, with myths. It can definitely be overprescribed. People can kind of undermine myths. People can overdo myths.
Yeah. And you mentioned it's a tool.
Exactly.
It's not the biggest tool in your bag.
Exactly.
The biggest tool in your bag is going to be coming from that kitchen. What's coming out of the kitchen, what you're eating,
mm-hmm.
And looking your level of adherence.
Picture. Yeah.
So.
And, you know, I think even when, you know, prescribing different types of cardio or deciding, you know, what kind of cardio you want to do yourself, you know, it's important to consider, what am I going to stick with? If you literally hate doing X amount of miss, maybe don't do that. Maybe just incorporate a little bit more less.
Yeah, start with less and get yourself used to that. Maybe find a cool show on Netflix and just, once you get that going, that's a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of want to do cardio. Then you got to be careful. But yeah.
Then you're one of those crazy people.
Yeah, then you're one of those weirdo. Like, I like cardio. Like, what?
Who are you?
We're not accepting clients. Sorry. I'm just kidding. You guys can all come over. We'll convert you. We'll get you to hate cardio. No, I'm just kidding. We won't do that. Considerations as far as, cardio types.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go over that really quick. I know we're getting really long and bored out here. Hopefully you guys are in a really long miss session. You guys can listen to us.
Yeah.
So we'll go to a couple of things that what I recommend. Specifically, I am very partial to the elliptical, arc trainer,
mm-hmm.
a step mill. We're going to go into step mill in a second. A rower or a stationary bike. Stationary
mm-hmm.
bike would probably be close to last because it is hard to get your heart rate up
there. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think reason behind, you know, all of those things kind of being your primary means of a cardio source, you know, back to the very first thing we talked about, running, you know, it's just easier on the joints. Running, it's high impact. There's a lot of room for error in form. So those things, you know, they're going to be
joint inflammation.
Yeah.
Increases in cortisol levels.
Yeah.
An increase in stress, pain.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So,
it's going to
interfere
effect.
With your training.
Mm-hmm.
Training. Always think training. What's going to affect my training least?
Mm-hmm.
And what is going to help me achieve my fat loss goals?
And what can I see myself doing?
Yes. What can I see myself doing? And don't be mm-hmm. afraid to progress it. You don't have to go all in or full tilt when you first start off. I mean, don't be afraid maybe not to do cardio. Maybe
mm-hmm.
just do a little bit of low intensity like Dana said.
Mm-hmm.
Start out with low intensity just to get yourself used to doing it and, okay, used to seeing what machine you're on. And just
mm-hmm.
if it's 10, 15 minutes, you're still getting yourself used to developing a habit.
Absolutely.
Of actually getting on the machine and holding yourself accountable to that.
Absolutely.
Then you can start getting a little bit more in depth, and then maybe start looking a little bit deeper on, okay, how can I manipulate the variables? So maybe I'll do I'm going to do calories burn rather than I'm just going to do a time session.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can apply that to my total calories.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or nearly. Obviously, if you burn 400 calories during miss, it's probably like only, you're probably only netting like 200. Maybe a little less, depending. But, so that's a consideration. Things that I see often in the gym is people doing really, really high incline walking. I know people, if this is a last resort, I know people will do it. Sure, I would be really careful doing this just for the simple fact of it puts pressure on your knees.
It does, yeah.
So if you think about it, like the opposing muscles going uphill, because most people are holding on to the top of the tr- and it's like, yeah. You're just go flat. Just go flat and go a little faster, because it's literally you're just hyperextending your knees at the top.
Exactly. And that brings up a good point. You know, with the stairs, you see a lot of people crank up that speed and they're leaning on the machine. Slap a heart rate monitor on those people. As soon as they lean on the machine, their heart rate probably drops like 20 beats per minute.
Exactly.
And then they stand up and they can't even do that speed for, you know, the amount of time that they would have if they were leaning on it.
Absolutely.
And I think that brings up a good point, as you don't necessarily need to move faster and compensate by leaning on these things. You just do it with proper form.
Absolutely.
It's a lot harder. Because
if you're on there
way.
For 30 minutes and you've got your posture's poor, you can develop some issues.
Yeah.
That could play into so many other parts of your programming or just your daily life.
It's exactly. Yeah.
You know, as I hunch over this chair.
I know, I'm really hunched over.
And we're doing 55 minutes, so that's
But
yeah,
still,
that's
at that point.
Point,
you know, it's not even serving a purpose. You're better off not doing it at that
Seriously.
Point.
And being careful on the step mill, too. So another thing is you get deeper in your cut. And obviously, we're talking a lot about fat loss here. I think we are going to probably do a part two or maybe touch on maybe bulking, and we'll touch on cardio during a bulk. Pros, cons, worth it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Who's it for? Who's it not for? But for fat loss purposes, as you get a little bit deeper, okay, you start noticing a little bit of fatigue. And maybe you want to be careful with using a step mill because it is very lower body dependent.
It is. And there's a lot more coordination involved. You know, you're picking up your feet with each step. You miss a step and you're going down.
Yeah, seriously. going down. They should probably put a tether line to you. People are doing like a Jacob's ladder and stuff like that too. Be careful on a Jacob's ladder. Like, I think they're a cool machine. Personally, I probably wouldn't use the Jacob's ladder for cardio, just for, you know. I give people credit that can do it.
Yeah.
It just seems like it's going to cause some posture issues.
And then, you know, even... You brought up a good point with using the step mill. Like, as you get deeper into a cut and you're more fatigued, you know, that's probably not going to be the best thing for you, because that at that point, that could probably start to affect, you know, your training in the gym.
Absolutely.
If that's fatiguing you, then maybe take it a step back and do something that's going to be a little bit, one, less harsh on your joints, not as taxing, and that'll still allow you to perform, you know, the same in the gym.
Yeah, or even improve.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that we've touched on a lot of topics. I'm very happy with how that turned out.
Yeah, that was
Is there anything
solid.
Else you want to add there, Dana?
I think we could go on forever, so maybe save the rest for
a
part
could talk about
two.
So much. We could talk about so much cardio. It's such a thing we dislike.
Yeah, I know. Cardi, no.
Things we like, we're like, just do it. Don't even listen.
Yeah.
Nothing to say. Just do it. Cardio is good, guys. It really
it
is. If you want to get to, you know, mostly you're going to have to use it in your daily, during the process. It's a fantastic tool to use to incorporate into lowering your calories. Improving your metabolic rate.
Yeah.
Because it transitions not only into directly burning calories and being able to eat more food.
Transition into
but
your lifts.
But it can transition into your lifts, your endurance. Your
Those
ability to do more
ranges.
Volume. That's huge. I mean, I see so many people that are big into lifting. They start a program. They do some moderate cardio. And their lifts, their one rep max are just through the roof. So there is a threshold.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, I'm going to start doing cardio and all the things, my lifts are going to go right down the tubes.
Mm-hmm.
That's not necessarily the point. As a matter of fact, on the contrary. I wouldn't say cardio is off, you know, terrible for you. And it is very good. For all purposes.
And there's not really an end-all be-all, you know. I think
for sure.
People want to know, what's the best cardio? What's going to make me lose fat the quickest? And sorry, guys, but there's...
No direct answer.
There isn't. It's not an
easy It might
easy
be different
answer.
For everybody.
It took us 60 minutes to give you a broad answer. So,
yes.
Sorry, there's no
We easy. Gave you enough information that you probably can make your own determination. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah.
And I hope that you've taken a little bit away from the difference between list, miss, and hit.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't, and you didn't know any of those terms, now you got some cool acronyms to talk about with your friends.
Yeah, some brain gains.
Brain gains. We made brain gains today.
We sure did.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, guys, for listening.
Yes, thanks,
if you
guys
want to connect with us on our social media pages... Dana, what's your Instagram handle?
It's at DL Siriano.
Mine is at Upstate Empire Fitness. You can also find us on our Facebook page, Upstate Empire Fitness.
And,
our website, upstateempirefitness.com. Our emails, Dana.
DLSeriano at UpstateEmpireFitness.com.
Yep, and you can do B Devins at Upstate Empire Fitness. If you want to talk to my queen bee, A Devins at UpstateEmpireFitness.com.
Yes.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Thanks.